Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, it's called The Plastic Monster, a sculpture that's 15 feet tall, and it's made out of plastic bags, bottles, and packaging. It visited the state capitol earlier this month, and it's been spotted in Publix parking lots. Now, the monster is part of an effort by Greenpeace to bring attention to single-use plastics, also the companies that use them, and efforts by legislators to prohibit local governments in Florida from banning these kinds of plastic products.
Yeah, some Florida cities have tried to ban things like styrofoam, plastic straws, and plastic bags. Palm Beach and Surfside here in South Florida, Gainesville in Central Florida, St. Augustine Beach in North Florida, all passed but then all repealed local plastic bans over worries of being sued. And, you know, opponents of the local bans say they violate state law that does not allow cities to prohibit plastics.
Now, also this week, the Florida Supreme Court decided not to hear a case over a Florida city's ban of styrofoam. The decision blocks local attempts to regulate polystyrene food containers. Lots going on with this issue. So today on the Florida Roundup, we are talking about plastics, the efforts to reduce their use, and who gets to decide that. So here's the question we're asking you, Florida. What do you think about this issue of home rule? Should cities be allowed to pass their own rules on single-use plastic? Or is this an issue best left to the state government? And what role do we as consumers play, along with major grocery chains and other companies, when it comes to plastics, which are very, very bad for the environment? We want to hear from you. Give us a call. It's 305-995-1800 to join us on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800. Already getting your tweets. Send them to @FloridaRoundup.
We'll take those phone calls and tweets in just a few moments. David Pinsky is with us first. He is the senior plastics campaigner for Greenpeace USA, joining us from Oakland, California. David, why bring your plastic monster to the Sunshine State?
Well, thanks, Tom and Melissa, for having me. We brought the plastic monster to the Sunshine State because Publix has failed to take action to reduce single-use plastics throughout its operations, and the retailers actively work to ensure that communities across the state cannot ban single-use plastics. By working with the Florida Retail Federation, Publix has supported laws that prevent local communities from enacting plastics bans. And these are anti-democratic laws, and they put short-term corporate profits before our environment.
So, David, why not focus on the legislature in terms of engaging at the statewide level?
Absolutely. So we were together with allies in the state capitol on February 4th for a lobby day with organizations like Surfrider, Plastic Pollution Coalition, Florida Student Perks, Oceana, Sierra Club, Plastic Free Florida. And we brought the plastic monster there and standing there in solidarity. So we absolutely are supportive of seeing these initiatives in the state legislature to overturn these preemptive laws. But really, when we see that Publix has more or less been bankrolling the Florida Retail Federation to enact these laws in the first place, we also need to see that corporate responsibility. And when communities, whether it's Coral Gables or Gainesville or Surfside, want to see a reduction in single-use plastics and to take on the plastic pollution crisis in their communities, that's the right. And we need to see big companies, big names that, you know, we think would have these good values, right, to support our communities like Publix, to get out of the way, stop blocking action, and actually be a part of the solution.
I'll ask you specifically about Publix in a moment, but I do want to take us back to this week's decision by the Florida Supreme Court. It was specifically about a state law prohibiting local bans on polystyrene, styrofoam, not directed at plastic straws or plastic bags. Certainly here. But what does this decision by the Supreme Court to allow essentially the prohibition on local styrofoam bans stand? What does that tell you about the court's attitude toward these local efforts?
Well, it's certainly unfortunate to see this news, but what I am confident about is that we have a strong coalition in Florida that is working with the state legislature and you know, Senate Bill 182, for example, that has been announced to try to overturn preemption. And so really it's an important moment for us as communities in Florida to come together to support these efforts to overturn these laws and ensure that communities can take action on single-use plastics.
You may feel optimistic about that, but you know, the governor has kind of reshaped the Supreme Court, this new Supreme Court, under the nominations of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and the state legislature, has led to this decision allowing the prohibition of local bans to stand.
Yeah, and so we've seen Governor DeSantis, have that veto over straws, so to allow communities to ban straws. So that's it's a small drop in the bucket compared to what we need to see in terms of action on single-use plastics. But that's not nothing. One thing I would say is, and also encouraging news, is that earlier this week in Washington, D.C., Congress members introduced the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act. And so this would be federal legislation that would be taking action to reduce single-use plastics nationwide, to add extended producer responsibility to the companies that are creating these plastics in the first place, and have a host of measures to start to reduce our reliance nationwide on single-use plastics.
David Pinsky is with us, a senior plastics campaigner for Greenpeace USA, with us from Oakland, California. A Greenpeace report, David, released back in June, looked at grocery store chains across the country and their plastic policies and practices. You've mentioned your criticism of Publix here during our conversation. Publix was one of the lowest scoring stores in this. Why was that?
Yeah, so Publix, out of the 20 large grocery retailers that we evaluated, from Aldi to Trader Joe's, Sprouts, Target, Costco, Whole Foods, Publix ranked 15th out of 20, and unfortunately, Publix is failing to take demonstrable action to reduce its large plastic footprint. The company boasts about removing plastic from a couple thousand mop heads in its sustainability report. It largely focuses on insufficient strategies like recycling to reduce its plastic footprint. When we look at the total number of plastics created, ever created, only 9% have been recycled, even more incinerated in more landfills.
Why do you call the recycling ineffective? And Publix isn't manufacturing this plastic, of course.
So, we've seen that recycling, again, only 9% of all plastics have ever been recycled. What we're finding, especially as countries like China have now implemented bans on U.S. plastic exports to them, there's no market for these recyclable, for these plastics to be recycled, and they have very low value. And then we've also seen a glut of natural gas production in the United States, and of course, most plastics are based on fossil fuels, so it's actually cheaper for businesses to rely on virgin plastic than recycled plastic.
Now, we did invite Publix to take part in today's program. Its spokesperson declined and did not give us a statement about the use of single-use plastics at Publix. Greenpeace also ranked Southeast Grocers, the owner of Winn-Dixie, just above Publix in this June ranking. What should consumers do here? What is your expectation of Florida consumers particularly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, look, if we're to contrast Southeastern Grocers with Publix, Southeastern Grocers actually participated in the extensive survey that Greenpeace distributed to all 20 of the companies.
And Publix did not participate.
Correct. Yes, Publix has refused to engage Greenpeace. We've reached out to the company for many years trying to have a productive dialogue.
Greenpeace, and back to consumers, though, David, in our final moments here with each other, what do you want consumers to do?
Absolutely. So, look, listeners can take action with Publix by texting Publix to 877-877. That's Publix to 877-877. And add your voice to a petition. We have over 20,000 folks that have called on Publix to take action. The next time you're at the grocery store, ask to speak to the manager. Let them know that you're concerned about the future of Florida's beaches, coastlines, and communities, and want to see action to reduce single-use plastics and innovate and create new systems where we can receive our products without single-use plastics or any other single-use material.
And again, we did invite Publix to participate in our program today. They declined our invitation. David, thank you for your time. David Pinsky is the senior plastics campaigner for Greenpeace USA.
Well, one Florida city that passed a plastic ban but then repealed it is St. Augustine Beach. Jane West worked to get that ban passed. She is policy and planning director at 1000 Friends of Florida. She joins us from WJCT in Jacksonville. Hey, Jane.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Why was it so important for St. Augustine Beach, in your view, to ban plastics like plastic bags?
Sure. This has been an issue that I've been working on with a coalition of people in St. Augustine Beach for many, many years. And we just felt that we couldn't sit there and complain about it and then actually not do anything ourselves. And so we decided to take action within our own municipality, the small coastal city of the city of St. Augustine Beach. We've got a population of about 7,000. It's a small geographic city, but we have some of the best beaches in Florida, and we felt that it was really appropriate to take action.
And the reason why cities around Florida have been working to ban or reduce plastics in this coastal state is simply because they're so bad for the environment and the oceans especially, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Plastics, plastic bags are frequently mistaken by sea turtles for jellyfish, their primary food source. So they end up ingesting them but not digesting them, and they die of starvation. People in Florida have a strong affinity for sea turtles, but we see plastic bags all over the beaches, stuck up in our wetlands. I mean, they're really horrific.
Okay, so you get the bag ban through in St. Augustine, but then it gets repealed.
Yes.
And the reason for that is?
Well, that was a direct result of the case that David mentioned. The Florida Retail Federation sued the city of Coral Gables, and the third DCA came out with a decision basically supporting the Florida Retail Federation. And in the wake of that, literally a week or two later, all of the municipalities and local governments that had passed bag bans got very threatening letters from the Florida Retail Federation, which is heavily bankrolled by Publix, as David mentioned, basically threatening repeal your bans or we will sue you. And if we win, we will recover our attorney's fees from you. And quite frankly, that was too big of a threat for a small municipality like St. Augustine Beach to take on.
Okay, so where does the issue go from here? Because the big issue around this is home rule in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, critics say that these preemption moves by the Florida legislature invalidate home rule or local decisions, whether it's plastics or gun regulations, even short-term vacation rentals. What are your thoughts about this tension we see in Florida between Tallahassee and the state legislature and cities that are trying to make decisions that their residents are in activism for?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. At the end of the day, the constituents have put local people in our local office to make decisions about our local issues. And the divestment of home rule by Tallahassee, trying to take over things as local as, you know, whether or not a municipality can make a decision on the removal of a tree. I mean, we know best at the local level. And so for Tallahassee to be engaging in a slew of preemption bills, and this particular legislature is just on a rampage trying to take away power from local government. And this is bipartisan in nature. I am hearing from all over the state. I work in Tallahassee for the legislative session. And from all over the state, we have people that are outraged over the fact that their local government basically has their hands tied behind their back on these issues.
305-995-1800 to join us here on the Florida Roundup. Tweets to at Florida Roundup. We are getting lots of tweets about this issue. We'll go to those in a moment. Let me ask you, Jane West, what would you say, though, to people who get their back up when they see that a city has banned plastic bags or straws? They feel that their choice to use those products is being taken away.
Right. Well, you know, a sea turtle doesn't exactly have a choice about being starved to death. I am all for choice in consumer decisions as well. But I also think we have a responsibility to be a little bit more cautious about our natural environment. Our natural environment here in Florida is a huge economic driver for tourism, which is one of the state's most important economies. So we cannot be reckless and short-sighted about the personal decisions that we are making.
This is has been a long slog for advocates like you. Checking into this, only 8 states around the country ban single-use plastic bags, and many others have moved in the opposite direction, like Florida. They've adopted these types of preemption laws to essentially tie the hands of local officials. And all the while, the waste is piling up. Drink bottles, food wrappers, plastic bags, nearly a fifth of U.S. municipal solid waste is this kind of stuff, and less than 10% of it gets recycled.
Right.
And so recycling efforts are great, but they are not reducing the amount of this stuff that's in our environment, in the oceans and in our landfills. So where does this movement go from here, given that progress at the state level has been honestly pretty slow?
Yeah, slow is not how I would characterize it. I would characterize it as going backwards. You know, when we are using on an annual basis 380 billion plastic bags in this country alone, that requires 12 million barrels of oil, of annual production of oil. So this is just very short-sighted. Where do we go from here? At the end of the day, I think it falls squarely within the consumer's choice. We need to start making decisions that are much more intelligent about our natural resources. Bring your own bag.
That, yeah, full disclosure, I started doing that a few years ago after interviewing lots of people like you.
Yeah.
I bring cloth bags with me whenever I go to the grocery store. I keep them in my car. It's not that hard to do.
Right.
It's just a change in habit. And changing habits is tough, isn't it?
It is. And as I mentioned to you before the show started, you know, we live in a very small city. So you can imagine if I ever got caught with a plastic bag anywhere, I would just be shamed to pieces. So
you've got to be careful then, don't you?
Absolutely. So I do bring my own bags.
You bring your own bags. Mm-hmm. And so that's your advice then to Florida consumers?
Well, more than just that. You know, so it's your responsibility, I think, to not only bring your own bags, but advocate very strongly. As David mentioned, start putting the pressure on the retailers that are, you know, basically using these plastic bags, and start supporting local businesses that are making the right decisions.
Now, you can recycle your plastic bags outside of a Publix location. But we heard Greenpeace say that really is, in their view, some weak sauce. What do you think about that? Because Publix does encourage us to bring back our bags and recycle them.
That really is a very weak greenwashing measure, in my opinion. Like David mentioned, we've got 9% recycling. We're talking about very thin plastic here. It's single-use plastic. You use it for maybe 10 minutes, and then it's stuck in a landfill for thousands of years. That single-use, very thin plastic, quite frankly, we can't recycle it all that well. It doesn't have the properties in it to be able to be used again and again and again. So recycling really is not a smart option for single-use plastic.
We will continue this conversation here on the Florida Roundup. This is interesting, right? Because we all have to go to the store. How do you bring home your groceries? Do you use the plastic bags? Do you ask for a paper bag? Or do you bring cloth bags? And what do you think about this tension in Florida between cities trying to ban the use of single-use plastics and the state legislature stepping in and saying no? Where do you stand on this? We are getting so many tweets and calls here on the Florida Roundup, and we want you to keep trying us. We'll get to your calls after the break. It's 305-995-1800 here on the show, and tweet us at Florida Roundup. The conversation is going to continue in just a moment. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami, talking about plastic bags, plastic straws, single-use plastic, styrofoam, efforts by local governments in Florida to ban the use and preemption efforts on the part of the state legislature to prohibit such local bans. 305-995-1800. Let's get some quick phone calls in here, beginning in Orlando with Bill. You are up next. First here, Bill. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you. First, a comment about tourism. The previous speaker mentioned the potential damage to tourism. It should be pointed out that tourism is responsible for 26 or 27% of the sales tax collected in the state of Florida. So that's a critical issue. To the point I wanted to make originally, I'd like to expand the conversation beyond local and state governments and pose the question as to why we are not talking about and to the plastics industry, which is the source of the pollution and the challenges that we're facing, much like we did with the tobacco industry. We declared smoking was a hazard to our health and society, and we did something about it.
Bill, interesting take there, to go down the supply chain to look at the manufacture of the plastic, in addition to obviously the consumer demand. Palm Beach Gardens, Daniel on line five. Let's hear from you real quick, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. The first thing I'd like to do is thank you too, Tom and Melissa. This sort of program is really what we need. I moved to Florida about 5-6 years ago at a time when we didn't even hear discussions on climate change. And you guys are really contributing to a change of discussion. You know, I run a non-city organization on environment, and this tension between cities and state governments or federal governments, this exists for a lot of different issues. One, for example, is fracking. It's very important for cities to take the lead. You know, when you have a state government that doesn't allow you to say climate change, it's cities and it's local people and government that begin to push the issue. And at the end of the day, regulations and norms are driven by people and society. So it's very important that we have these discussions and we push forward. In terms of the plastic bags, you know, I grew up in California and have seen the other side. And it's not that hard. You know, once you ban the bag, you start taking your own. And in addition to get charged, there's a big incentive. So I think we need to, as people, not only as consumers, we need to make the effort. And we also need to think about who we vote for at the polls.
Daniel, got it. Thanks for joining the conversation here on the Florida Roundup from Palm Beach Gardens.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one from Jonah. I'm disappointed in Publix for their part in blocking single-use plastic bans. I'm a lifelong Publix lover and former employee, but I'll be frequenting Trader Joe's and Whole Foods more. Thanks, Florida Roundup, for bringing this to our attention. Here's another tweet. Inaction from the state shouldn't prevent local government from tackling the reins to ban plastic bags. I have no problem lugging my reusable bags everywhere I shop. If we give people options, the majority would support the bag bans. One more tweet. This one's from Lewis. The hypocrisy of the legislature is stunning. They rail against any federal control over the state, but they refuse to allow local governments the same control they crave. Let's talk about that a little more with Bruce Ritchie. He is the energy and environment reporter for Politico Florida, with us from the Capitol, WFSU in Tallahassee. Bruce, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Okay, so is the legislature hypocritical in terms of how they handle these home rule types of issues, whether it's plastic bags or Airbnb rentals, you name it? As we've been hearing from our guests today and some listeners out there, they perceive that the legislature doesn't always allow communities to adopt the practice of home rule on these issues. What's the thinking of lawmakers on this?
The thinking of the Republican leaders is that that the state is responsible for maintaining uniform standards across the state, and that and they listen to and heed the arguments of the Florida Retail Federation, saying that we are going to end up with a patchwork of regulations from one city to the next if preemptions and standards are not established at statewide level. And it's an appealing argument to Republicans and who tout themselves as being pro-business.
So, in other words, plastic bags have lobbyists, right?
They certainly do, and they are winning, as we reported with Politico last month with my colleagues in New Jersey and in California. Those states are moving towards bans. California already has one, but California is one of only eight states with a ban, and the preemption route is winning for the industry. They got a preemption in Florida in 2008. They got it reinstated by the court this past year, and that's what they're doing in other states. Florida was one of the earliest.
And there's a lot of money at stake here in this business. Can you, you've been writing about that in Politico. Can you share a little bit more about what you uncovered?
It's a $1.4 billion industry in the United States, and it surpasses $20 billion globally. And that is not only it's plastic bags, but it's also something called food pouches, where you get a lot of things that are freezer. You can stick them right in the microwave and hit the button. So that's just the plastic bag industry alone. But when we start to get into all kinds of consumer plastics, it's difficult to imagine as I look at the water bottles sitting here in the studio.
Right, and we're all guilty of it, aren't we? People will sometimes, maybe not always, recycle that plastic water bottle. They don't know what to do with their plastic bags. Here in Florida, though, Bruce, where the economy and the environment are so closely interlinked, how much more complicated does that make the issue in this state, do you think?
I think it's complicated everywhere. I mean, you know, we do have beaches here, and the volunteers say they're out there picking up plastic straws and bags and cigarette butts. It's they really see the plastic bags and straws as the beginning point for really a ban of a lot of single-use plastic products. The environment, yeah, it's important in places like Colorado as well. They have a preemption there. It's important in California. They do have a statewide ban. I kind of feel like the environment's important everywhere, but also a lot of these products are coming from into the oceans from other countries, mm-hmm. as well, and that's another argument. That's an argument that the plastic bag industry makes.
We'll point out that a single ban may not have a significant comprehensive effect when looking at the global use of those kinds of products. Bruce Ritchie is with us, the environment and energy reporter at Politico. He's with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. 305-995-1800 in Tampa. Alice on line four. Go ahead, Alice. You're on the radio.
Oh, hi. Yes. I listen to the public radio all the time when I'm traveling, and this one really caught my attention because Publix does have the recycling, and they're also included styrofoam. But we are failing to look at other retailers and those that are even larger than Publix and have a much greater effect on the environment with plastic bags, such as Walmart. They don't even offer any other choice but plastic, unless you bring your blood bag.
Yeah, Alice.
And they don't actively sell it either.
It's a good perspective there, a good point there from Tampa. Bruce Ritchie, how about those other international retailers that are here? Walmart, Target, Costco, the wholesale clubs. We've talked a lot about Publix. It's a homegrown institution in Florida. Certainly, Floridians feel very strongly about Publix. But what about some of those other companies? Are they part of that mix when it comes to influence in Tallahassee?
The influence in Tallahassee is really, there's not a lot of influence that they really have to exert on this issue. The issue is bottled up. The Florida Retail Federation has made a very strong argument over the years to the legislature, or it's an argument that they have considered strong, that we have recycling efforts for bags. They'll say that there are plastic bags are not inherently bad. They'll say we're trying. We try to reduce. We try to increase public education. We try to make cheap reusable bags available. But we just think that there should be a choice. That's an argument that they just have got locked down in the legislature. These bills to lift preemptions do not go anywhere. They are not going anywhere. They're backed by Democrats. They're not moving.
More tweets further, coming into the show. Here's one. Could hemp-based plastic be a solution? People will always want plastic bags for household garbage. Jane West with 1,000 Friends of Florida. What about that part of this? people who might not really feel comfortable with all of the plastic bags floating around, they sometimes justify it in their minds because they think, well, I use it a second time. When I take the dog out for a walk, or when I bring my lunch to work in a plastic bag I grab from home. What about that dynamic?
Sure. I mean, obviously, if you can expand beyond single use and make it double use or triple use, you know, that is great. But at the end of the day, it's still a plastic bag that is made by oil that ends up in our landfill very frequently because of their lightweight nature. They fly off of landfills and end in our ecosystem, unlike other products that end up in our landfill. So it's a problem.
And they end up, there's a stretch of the Pacific Ocean that's dozens of miles wide,
right,
that is nothing but trash. Yeah. You know, plastic bottles, plastic bags, all of our refuse. So much of it ends up in the ocean, and it's killing marine life. But because we don't see it, it's not right in front of our faces. We don't think about it when we enjoy the convenience of these single-use plastics.
Right. We may not see it, but it's in us. We are ingesting it because we are eating the fish that consume it. So, you know, if this is an issue that we want to continue to get engaged on, yes, the cleanups are great. And by the way, I'd like to mention that down in St. Augustine, you can participate in intercoastal cleanups on the Litter Getter, which is supported by the Matanzas Riverkeeper. It's such a fun experience if you have kids or a group or an organization to get out there and feel good about what you're doing for your environment in your backyard.
And the Litter Getter is tweeting the show too. So
awesome.
Shout out to him, Tom. Name for a cleanup service.
It's a great name. Great branding there from St. Augustine Beach to the Florida Keys all the way down. Kirk on line 10. Go ahead, Kirk. You're on the radio. Kirk, you with us from the Florida Keys?
Yeah, I thought you were going to play the thing I said earlier. So, all right. Well, essentially what I mentioned earlier was we aren't engaging where it's economically viable, you know, the carrot and the stick theory, you know, show them why it's beneficial to stop doing it, coordinate efforts more effectively between the groups that are trying to do something about it. Because right now, it's every group for himself sort of mindset. And there's a monetary value involved in every bit of waste stream that we have. But we're not tapping into it, and our leadership within our community structure is not utilizing it to help pay bills, which then would get everybody behind it because they would see how it's beneficial on multiple levels, whether it be the tax base paying for school programs or whatever, fill a pothole.
Kirk, are you talking about putting a tax or a fee on a plastic bag like some cities outside of Florida are doing?
No, not at all. Basically, it's a commodity. Nobody seems to quite, we spend millions getting rid of it, burying it, dumping it, finding ways to eliminate it from our site. In the next breath, it, like, you know, in the ocean, in the mangroves, everywhere, it is there. Whether we hide it or not, it's still breaking down into microparticles. But our general need is, how do you showcase to somebody who doesn't understand or doesn't in the aware enough of that particular problem, how it will affect them and impact them in a positive way to do something about it? And I'm talking across the board waste streams.
Yeah.
There's technology sitting on the shelf that we and been our group of nonprofits tries to bring it, sit down with community leaders, and they're like, it's just above their heads. Mm. I mean, you try to explain it ABC.
Kirk,
well,
listen.
It's worth something to do something with it.
Some economic incentives on the supply chain. Kirk, joining us here on the Florida Roundup from the Florida Keys. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
James tweets the show, I'm an active dumpster diver, and those plastic bags people bring in for recycling are going in the dumpster, actually. All the grocery stores do it, he says. Publix, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's. All right, so Bruce Ritchie with Politico. That gets to this whole issue of what people call wish cycling. You feel so virtuous when you recycle your plastic bags or you recycle other products, but so often it doesn't ever make its way through the recycling process. And each time you take more plastic bags home, you're adding to the load. You're adding to the landfill, right?
Yes. Mine are useful for the litter box for the cat, but they do get used.
Right.
Yes, there are problems with these bags and other materials that, that people will put into their recycling bins. Pizza boxes are one of the favorite complaints that will contaminate the whole load. An industry rep with the plastics recycling industry making a case at the Society of Environmental Journalism conference in October that the whole recycling system at the local level really needs to be upgraded so that these recycling facilities are able to take more plastics and able to handle things like bags.
Bruce, you mentioned how the preemption effort is faring in the state legislature. This year, among the places it's focused on beyond plastics is sunscreen. The city of Key West, for instance, has tried to ban certain types of sunscreen that the science has shown is detrimental to the coral reefs, which are so important to the natural habitat and, of course, tourism for Monroe County. What's the state of that legislative effort to essentially prohibit local bans on certain sunscreens?
That is on the fast track. It passed the Senate last week. The Senate Appropriations Chairman, I would say the second most powerful person in the Senate, was the sponsor of the bill, and he is recently had a medical procedure on his face to remove something, presumably cancer, and he says that Florida is a sunshine state and it needs these chemical sunscreens in order to protect the tourists and people who come here. The environmentalists are certainly pointing out that there are mineral sunscreens available that are considered reef friendly and that they should be used, and they are available in the stores and they will always be available. The chemical, they don't just have to use the chemical sunscreens, but that's going to surely pass. Now, the big question, of course, will be whether the governor might veto that or not. He vetoed the straw preemption bill last year, and that quite a few people were caught by surprise by that.
That was an interesting move by DeSantis. What an interesting discussion from both of you, and thank you so much for sharing your thoughts here on the Florida Roundup with us. We're continuing to get tweets about this. It is a hot topic. Thank you so much, Bruce Ritchie with Politico Florida, with us from Tallahassee. Jane West with me in Jacksonville. She's with 1,000 Friends of Florida. Earlier, we spoke with David Pinsky of Greenpeace. Thanks to all of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. A quick break.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Bruce. A quick break. And in a moment, you won't believe how many people in Florida are driving around or not driving because their license has been suspended. And it's all because of fines and fees. That's next here on the Florida Roundup.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup this week. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, how about this? More than 1 in 10 of you out there, and by you, I mean drivers in Florida, has a suspended driver's license. And most of these folks have had their driving privileges suspended, not because of dangerous or careless driving, but simply because of unpaid fines or fees. Now, for just one day last year, 64 of Florida's 67 counties waived collection costs for people who hadn't paid those fines on time. That one-day opportunity allowed drivers to set up a payment plan for their original fine and get their license back. Many of them did.
Now, WLRN's Nadege Green visited the Palm Beach County Courthouse during that one-day event last year.
I have a driver's license that's been indefinely suspended for 5 years.
Michael Harris was able to get the collections cost waived from what he owed.
I got $600 waived.
He paid the $1,100 he owed from a criminal case, something that had nothing to do with his driving. He didn't know his driver's license could get suspended for that. After paying, he went to the DMV truck parked outside of the courthouse, and within minutes, he got his license for the first time in 5 years.
It feels great.
Right now, he drives a forklift and stripes roads, but without a license, he couldn't get any of the better paying jobs driving a work truck.
I can move up and pay. I could probably get a $2 raise.
According to the Florida clerks and controllers, about 2,000 people got their licenses reinstated at Operation Green Lights across the state last year.
So, have you had your driver license suspended? Why was that? Is it because of unpaid fines or fees? And have you tried to get that license back? At what financial cost? 305-995-1800. We'll take your phone calls in just a few moments. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup.
Now, there's a push in the state legislature to make it easier for people with a suspended license because of unpaid fees to get it reinstated. Representative Byron Donalds is a Republican whose district includes Hendry and part of Collier counties, and he joins us now. Rep. Donalds, thanks for appearing with us here on the Florida Roundup.
Thanks for having me, guys. How you doing?
Great, thanks. So how would your bill allow Floridians to get their driver's license back?
Actually, it's pretty simple and straightforward. What we wanted to do is really begin to have a uniform process across the entire state of Florida. We would give people 30 days to engage their clerk and just to be able to let the clerk know that they're interested and want to begin to set up a payment plan to get their license, to keep their license or to get their license back. Once that happens, then the clerks would have another 45 to 60 days to negotiate a payment plan. So people can figure out a payment plan, something that works in their life, that they can definitely make the payments on, and then go through the process of paying their fees and their fines that they do owe in an orderly and a timely fashion while being able to keep their licenses. I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, whether it's a traffic ticket, some sort of court proceeding, and there are fines, oh, yes, we have to find a way for those fines to come in because that's how the court system actually funds itself. But what we want to get away from is the practice that we're just basically suspending licenses simply because people can't pay the full amount at that one time. And that's what we're working on doing.
Okay. And so for those people out there who've had a license suspended simply because of inability to pay, you know, is it fair to take someone's license away because they are in financial arrears? They're not losing it over being a dangerous driver or a careless driver necessarily. What about that aspect of this issue?
Well, I think that's really the crux of the matter when you start to dig into this is really just a matter of protocol in our state has been that the hammer, if you will, to pay your fines and fees is that your license would be suspended. The problem is that right now, there's probably about 1.1 million people in the state who have suspended licenses simply because they're not making those payments because they can't make the payment for whatever the case might be. There have been a few clerks in our state that started doing payment plans, and they started to see positive results. What we're doing in this bill is making that a uniform process so all Floridians, if they fall into that unfortunate situation, and get their license, get back on the road in a lawful way, take care of their families, get a better job, and just be productive citizens.
Sure, because if you can't drive, that can cripple your chances to get to work in huge parts of the state. We're speaking with Representative Byron Donalds of Hendry and Collier counties about his bill that would help people, more than a million of you out there who've had your driver's license suspended over unpaid fines and fees. Now, your legislation, how would it empower the state DMV? You would not allow the DMV to suspend a license for lack of payment. Is that right?
Well, actually, the process is that if payment isn't made, the clerk of the court notifies Florida Department of Motor Vehicle to suspend the license. That's how that works. That actually is triggered by the clerk of the court in a county called Miami-Dade or Duval County or Collier County. So that's how it technically works. Florida DMV does not suspend licenses. They're told to suspend the license by the clerk of the court. And so that's why what we want to do is make sure that there's a pathway for citizens to get this worked out with their local clerk. If they have a debit card or a checking account, those payments can be taken in automatic debit form from those accounts. And so that way the clerk actually starts to have a process where the fees are being paid, and then Florida DMV is not notified to suspend the license. That's how that would work.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Let's take your phone calls at 305-995-1800. Have you had an experience with the suspended driver license here in Florida? 305-995-1800. You could also tweet us that experience at Florida Roundup. In Tampa, Morgan is on line one. Go ahead, Morgan. You're on the radio.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. My license was suspended because I unintentionally underpaid a ticket. I could not read the decimal place. I didn't find out till almost a year later when I went to re-register my vehicle. I walked in and they told me, oh, your license is suspended. I had not received any notification of it. And when I say underpaid the ticket, it was by pennies. So my license wound up suspended and it wound up costing me almost $500 to reinstate my license. Hopefully there's some sort of something in your bill that would address underpayment that's unintentional. I mean, it was pennies. We're not talking about hundreds of dollars. It was a ticket for having the incorrect insurance card. It had expired when they checked my license and everything.
Yeah,
like
Morgan,
that was the only thing.
Thank you for sharing that experience. Representative Donalds, how about that experience? The in Morgan's case, what he claims the unintentional underpayment, but perhaps I think the bigger picture there is also notification of a suspended license. He didn't know the license was suspended until he went in later.
Well, one of the things that we do in this bill is that we do make it a requirement of the clerk to notify somebody that they owe fees and fines. And that is actually being expanded past just getting a letter in the mail to also be able to get that information electronically in email and other forms. I mean, obviously, you know, the way we take in information has changed a lot in the country over the last 50 years. And so far more Floridians are getting their information by emails and even by text messaging.
So would this legislation, Representative, would this legislation then require notification of a suspended license? In the case of Morgan, for instance, somebody who he just didn't know was suspended until he went back later.
What is in the bill is notification of fees that are owed.
Mm-hmm.
We could make the logical assumption that if in this case that there was, you know, 5 cents or 10 cents that was still owed, he would still be notified of that.
Okay. Let me try to squeeze in one more phone call here in Winter Haven. Sean on line 4. Go ahead, Sean. You're on the radio.
Yes, I was stopped by an officer and put in handcuffs because my license had been suspended. I had no idea. They said they didn't have an idea. I got out of it because Florida was playing Florida State that night, and he said he didn't want to do the paperwork. So they let me go. And I went down to the state's attorney's office, and they told me that it was written on the ticket in their code that it was because I had lapsed insurance from a car that I had sold 2 years prior, which was also 2 cars prior. So I had insured and tagged 2 cars after the fact.
Yeah, Sean, we're really tight on time here, but good to know that the football game, I suppose, saved you.
Saved
there.
Him that one time.
Yeah,
man.
Pretty remarkable.
Horror stories out there.
Yeah, really. Representative Donalds, we are just right up on the clock here, but the odds of your legislation moving through the House and Senate, what do you give it?
Actually, the odds are pretty good. We've done a lot of work in the legislature. One of the things we're having to work through is the fiscal adjustment when Florida DMV doesn't collect as much money as they do typically for reinstatement. And so we're having to figure out how we're going to get around that. But I think we're in a good space to get this passed and to do something positive for all the people of Florida.
Representative Donalds, appreciate your time. Yeah, that financial component is going to be a significant one because many in the court system get paid because of those fines and fees collected, not only, of course, with driver's licenses and whatnot, but all those fines and fees. Representative Donalds,
yeah.
Thanks for spending your time here with us on the Florida Rundown. Much appreciated.
Yeah, good
of
to
course.
Have
thank
him on
guys.
The show, and thank you, and good to hear from all of the callers out there. Clearly, just based on those few calls, people have run into this problem, and it's a big one. So thanks for weighing in, everybody. Thanks for listening today to the show, too. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and our Technical Director this hour. The WLRN Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. We get engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon. Have a great weekend.